We have been living in an era in which there are no absolute moral standards. Our children are raised in this atmosphere. Anything goes. School teachers tell their children, your body belongs to you, not your parents. You can do anything with it you want. This is the era we are living in. And perhaps the only thing that's more difficult is giving a discourse of advice to parents that are trying to raise their children in this era. When I got this assignment from the convention committee, because of the problems we're living in today, I said, why? Why me? Why not Homer? I'll switch. Besides scriptural principles that I'm going to deal with, I will draw from two areas of personal experience. One, as you know, I spent many, many years with young people, and I still enjoy one-on-one sessions with them. I think I understand youth. I think they realize that I love them very much. And secondly, our own experience of raising children. Sometimes I was very successful. On other occasions, I failed. And I will try to incorporate the lessons from failure that I learned into this my lesson today. Parental responsibility. What would be your basic scripture? 1 Corinthians 7:14. Remember, Paul said that the unbelieving partner, married partner, is sanctified by the believing married partner. Why? So that the children would be holy. And the word holy here could be just as well translated sanctified. And what does sanctify mean? Being set apart. Our children, because they are children of consecrated, spirit-begotten parents, are holy or set apart to the Lord. They don't belong to you. They belong to the Lord. And they're set apart, at least temporarily, until they reach maturity. And they are set apart for the Lord in two possible ways. Remember in Acts 2:39, Paul says, the promise is unto you and to your children. And then to whosoever the Lord will call far off. The children are the first ones in line for the promise of the high calling. And then Zephaniah 2 and 3. Seek meekness, seek righteousness, and it might be that you will be hid in the day of God's wrath. Well, we hope that as a result of our parental guiding, our children will fall into one of these classes, either consecrated to sacrifice or consecrated to righteousness, looking forward to the earthly blessings of the kingdom. Now, there's four ingredients I feel in a successful parenting. One, faith. Faith in the scriptural principles for raising children, that they are correct. And also faith that if we follow them to the best of our ability, whether or not our children go on to a consecration of sacrifice, that their eternal destiny will be the better because of our parenting. The second ingredient in successful parenting is love. Unconditional love. Not loving as a reward for what we want to make out of our children, but because they are creatures of God. A love for them because they are unique in themselves. And the third ingredient is that the principles, scriptural principles of parenting, will only be effective if they are administered by a Christ-like character, if they are administered by one having the Spirit of the truth. And the fourth ingredient in successful parenting is humility. Daily getting down on bended knee, realizing that only by God's grace and His principles that we can be to any degree successful in raising our children. And the proof of successful parenting is not whether or not our children go on to a full consecration. Only God does the calling. And there's many factors that enter into this calling. What we have to avoid is pushing our children into consecration and just being content that if we guide them in the ways of the Lord, they are in the Lord's hands. I look what the world is offering our children. And I look at what we as Bible students are offering them, or the way we're offering it, and the way the world offers it. And I want to cry. Through the media of TV, movies, videos, rock records, the world is marketing sex, violence, dishonesty, drugs. You know, we have the greatest product in the universe, the truth. And how are we marketing it? Oh, if you're like me, through stammering lips, stammering tongues, and lisping lips. How can we compete with the world's marketing? Well, we have one secret weapon. The Spirit of Truth. The Holy Spirit. In our hearts. No, I look at parents whose children have suffered violence in the school system or are in danger of physical violence, and most of them in danger of being morally degraded. And these parents are struggling with the decision of whether to leave their children in school or public schools or take them into homeschooling. And this breaks your heart to see this struggle, because either way, there are some adverse effects on the children. I look at parents with single children, unable to marry in the truth, and you want to cry. And then I look at our singles, people, brethren, in their 20s, in their 30s, in their 40s, and 50s. They feel like fifth wheels in the Bible student movement. And our teens see this, and they say, this is not for me. Brethren, we have not coped with singles in our midst to make them an integral part of the body of Christ. Oh, our social structure in the Bible student movement revolves around married couples spending time with married couples and families spending time with families. And our single brethren go home after a meeting to four empty walls. Children have a strict sense of justice. For us to influence them for the good, they have to see in our Bible student lifestyle not just a letter of the truth, but the Spirit of the truth. In that Spirit of the truth, how it affects us in our day in and day out relationship in the world. What happens when we get extra change by the cashier? Do we smile and put it in our pocket? Our children see that. What do they hear at home? Do they hear gossip, evil speaking about their brethren? Our children have a strict sense of justice. What do they see in our interplay with them? Justice or domination? Love your children for their sake, not yet what you want them to do to fulfill your ego needs. Love them for their sake and not just because you want them to consecrate. If they realize this sincere love on your part, many, many times they will refrain from doing a wrong, not because they agree with you, but simply because of your selfless love on their behalf. No, Don mentioned punishment or disciplining. We're going to talk very briefly about disciplining. Here's a Bible student youth that's been disciplined. Doesn't look very happy, does he? A child who is denied a privilege because of disobedience will think twice before he disobeys again. Indeed, children must learn the consequences for their misdeeds. They must learn that there are consequences, that we reap what we sow. Now, earthly parents are exhorted not to spare the rod. But at the same time, the Christian home is pictured as a happy place where the children are the crowning joy of the parents. There must be discipline in the Christian home. But punishment should be fair and just, lest the children be provoked to anger. Remember Paul's words in Ephesians 6:4? And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. There are two extremes. There is a danger of being too permissive with our children. Parents must guard against overindulgence. There is an equal danger on the other side of the ledger of parents who are overly strict and unreasonable in their demands and too severe in their punishment. And this severe punishment can often lead to our children lying. They're afraid of us. They cover up when they make a mistake or do something wrong. It makes our children fearful and nervous. They might even be very docile, but not happy. And ungrounded threats should never be used as a disciplinary measure. Now, the major part of my time I want to spend in establishing a very practical way to approach all problems we face in raising children. And then, after that, we will briefly deal with 11 guidelines in raising children. First, the practical approach. Now, I read about a fantastic experiment in a book written by a horticulturalist. The book's title was The Secret Life of Plants by Peter Tompkins. And he says, pick two ordinary leaves, identical leaves off a plant. Put them on paper about 10 inches apart. And then go to one leaf and say, oh, you're ugly. Don't say it. Think it. Just look at it and think, you're ugly. You're awful. You're worthless. I hate you. And then go to the other leaf. And don't even speak to it. Just think. Oh, you're beautiful. I love you. Your color is so wonderful. And keep doing this over a period of days, and what happens? Well, you're supposed to take thicker leaves. I took thin leaves. Here's the one to say, as I said, I hate you. You're ugly. And here's the one that I said, I love you. And because it is a thin leaf, it's curly in a letter, but it's soft. The texture is still very soft. And here the texture is shriveling up. Just the power of thought and attitude was conveyed. Now I'm not talking about mental telepathy. But what we think conveys attitudes. If we think negatively about others, for example, if we think negatively about our brethren, we can't help them. We're not in a position to help them. If we think positively about our brethren and their spiritual interests, then they sense our attitude and they respond and are a blessing. Try it during the next intermission. Think positively about your brethren and they will respond to you. But one word of caution. As Christians, we must be honest in the attitudes we convey. You know, in the experiment we just considered, these were not honest attitudes. I wasn't honest when I said to this leaf, I hate you. I wasn't honest when I said to this leaf, I love you. But we can even convey attitudes. And they have a tremendous effect on others. And boy, we can take advantage of this and use it to the disadvantage of our brethren. Paul's words in Galatians 4:17 and 18. They zealously affect you, but not well. Yea, they would exclude us that they might affect you. But it is good to be zealously affected, always in a good thing. Yes, lying attitudes were used to manipulate these leaves. One into drying up, and one into looking healthy. And lying attitudes can manipulate our brethren. We can just pour such love and affection, feigned love and affection on brethren, and manipulate them. And make them fuss over us and feel ingratiated to us. Let us be very honest in our attitudes of the brethren, but let us develop positive attitudes to our brethren and positive attitudes to our children. And we just have to think these attitudes, and it will affect our demeanor towards them. Okay, a question to parents. What's the reason you work? Why do you go to work? To provide the things that are necessary. To make my family comfortable. Right? No. Wrong. The main reason you are working is to learn lessons that will develop in you a Christ-like character to qualify you to be a part of the world's high priest. Okay, parents, another question. What's the main reason you want to be a good parent? Oh, to raise a wholesome child, capable of all their potentials, who love the Lord. Right? No. Wrong. The main reason we want to be good parents is to develop a Christ-like character to qualify us not only to bless our children, but the whole world of mankind in the kingdom. And to be able to glorify God throughout eternity. What is the most important thing in any difficult experience you have? How can I use this experience to become more Christ-like? This attitude should be true in our problems with our brethren, with our neighbors, with our fellow workers, with our boss, with our husband, with our wife, and with our children. When we have a serious problem with our children, whether it is little tots learning with learning problems, disabilities, or little tots who are belligerent, or older children going out with the wrong crowd, what is our reaction? Sometimes it's confrontation, shouting, arguing, impatience, anger, scorn, unkindness. You say, well, I have a right to be angry when my child lies to me. You know, there's three reasons children lie. One is heredity. Not directly from you necessarily. From generations past it can be. The combination of the genes are multiple. The second reason children lie is the influence of their friends. A third reason children lie, they are afraid of you. They're afraid to let you know they did something wrong. The fact that your child is lying, hiding from something from you, could be that they are afraid of you. Your hostile thoughts and your hostile words have made them feel that you don't like them. You know the feeling, I'm a disappointment to my parent, is one of the greatest sources of emotional anguish in children. What is the most important thing in this experience? That your child is lying? No. The most important thing in this experience is showing you. This experience is showing you what quality of Christ likeness you are lacking. Now, what will happen when you practice that lacking quality of Christ-likeness in this experience? It will enable you to help your child in that experience. When you shout, are impatient, angry, unkind, children tend to think that you hate them. If you want your child to thrive like the leaf, you will have to change your attitude. And the best way to change your attitude is by saying to the Lord, I've been given this difficulty to learn some lack in my spiritual nature, some lack in my Christ-likeness. Lord, reveal to me this lack so I can help my child in this situation. And when you're in this attitude, when you think of your child, your lying child, or your disobedient child in this attitude, what am I lacking here that I can help them? You will begin to become thankful that your child is providing you an experience for spiritual development. After all, from God's standpoint, from God's view, we're all what? Children and disabled children, imperfect, disobedient children. Now, what character traits does your child lying to you at this time force you to work on? Well, say it's your doubt. Say, thank you, darling, for giving me this opportunity to work on patience and to work on self-discipline. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to do kindness and help you. And say it with enthusiasm. You know, our children at times just seem so imperfect. But you know, they are the perfect child for us, for our spiritual development. And look at your imperfections of your children from that standpoint. They are the perfect child for us to learn spiritual development. Keep seeing your child as a source of wonderful opportunities for Christ-like development. In prayer, thank the Lord for the source of development, and you will love your child for it. And when she feels this genuine love, she will strive. She will be wholesome and healthy like the leaf. When you feel loving, what happens? When you feel loving, you feel positive toward your child. And what happens when you start thinking positively? You start thinking of ways to help the individual that's involved. No, this is the way our mind works. When you start thinking positively, enthusiastically, all sorts of ideas come into your mind how you can help that person. What happens when you're a mother, okay? You decide, I'm going to have the family over for Thanksgiving. And all of a sudden, ideas start popping in your mind. What you're going to cook, how you're going to prepare it, some fancy dish you want to fix, how you can make your table very attractive. Oh, who's all the people we're going to invite? Your mind just starts popping out with all sorts of thoughts because you're thinking positively in something that you're enthusiastic about. And you cannot help your lying child. You cannot help your belligerent child. You cannot help your disobedient child if you think negatively about them. But if you think positively, if you thank the Lord for this opportunity to develop some quality you're lacking in this situation, you will start thinking positively about them. Ideas will start popping into your mind how you can help them. You know, I used to make mental notes of positive acts that Janet and Phil did. And I'd tell them about it. And I'd thank them for it. Go one step further than this. I encourage all mothers, especially those having serious problems with their children, to keep a notebook. Jot down the child's positive acts, the things that they do that you appreciate so much each day. And at the end of the day, read that notebook back to them. All the reasons why you're so thankful for the way they acted that day. Why you're so, I'll use proud in the best terminology. You're so satisfied with them. You're so pleased with them. Keeping this notebook is a sublime act of kindness. And telling them about it is something they will treasure for years. You know, emotional nourishment is just as important as the food that you put on the table to feed their natural means. Okay, we're going to deal with 11 guidelines for raising children and give brief comments on some of them. One, let children know what is expected of them. Remember Brother Leo's talk last night? Eli, the priest of Israel, the religious leader of the nation, yet his own sons were a disgrace to him and an abomination to the Lord. And what was the reason? As Leo read from the Bible last night, Eli restrained them not. I'm going to read Barclay's version of Proverbs 13:24. He who spares his rod hates, he who spares his rod hates his son. But he who loves him is diligent to chasten him. Children need the guidance of their parents. They must know what is expected of them, what is off bounds. And although children may fuss and fume and act disgruntled, statistics have been taken and revealed that children actually appreciate discipline. They appreciate guidelines. It gives them a sense of direction. And inside, it makes them happier. Second, explain the reason for rules. Although rules and regulations are necessary, they should not be meaningless. When you explain the reason for the restrictions you place upon your children, they will be much more willing to accept them cheerfully. Don't just say, well, do it because I said so. They want to know the whys. Three, make regulations flexible. Yes, rules and standards are necessary and important. But you know, children aren't machines. You don't just push the button and expect to do exactly what you want. There are times when you can and should make exceptions to rules. Life is a series of adjustments. It's only in matters of severe principle, moral matters, and religious matters where we do not budge. But in matters of non-essentials, your children will appreciate it at times when you listen to them and understand why in this area maybe something doesn't apply. Your children will respect you the more for it, and they will love you for it. Fourth, avoid an unnecessary clash of wills. Have you ever thought how your child's world is controlled by you all day long? Do this. Don't do that. Come when I call you. Come when I say this. All day long, your children are subject to your will. And of course, this has to be until they reach the age of maturity. However, children are people, and they have ideas of their own. These ideas might not always coincide with yours. And there's a clash. Since there are many times when a child's will must be subject to yours. Again, don't make an issue of non-essentials. Substitute acceptable activities for unacceptable activities. The principle holds true for older children or younger children. When a child is engaged in an activity that seems undesirable, don't spend all of your time lecturing to them, telling them why it's undesirable. Oh, do that in a nice way, but don't spend all your time just saying, no, that's not right. You can't do it. Instead, substitute a possible acceptable activity. For example, if your youngster has gotten in with the wrong crowd or a wrong person, don't keep condemning them, these individuals. Introduce them to other boys and girls. And as Bible students, better yet, invite Bible student children over to your home for the weekend. Invite Bible student children from a distance that you know they enjoy over to your home for a weekend. Substitute positive activities for the negative activities they are tempted to engage in. Six, teach children to be thoughtful of others. By nature, people are self-centered. A small child thinks only in terms of himself. You know, me, mine, my are some of the first words that our children learn. Thoughtfulness is something that does not come naturally for most. It must be learned, and you as a parent are to teach them. Seven, give children responsibility. There's probably nothing that challenges a person more than responsibility. This is true of children as well as adults. A child needs to feel that he has a place to feel in life, that he has a positive contribution to make. 8, be a good listener. You know the old saying, a child should be seen and not heard? Well, this might be true in certain situations, but it is not true and it's not biblical in other situations. A child should be heard by their parents and heard often. When a child or anybody tells you how he feels, even if he disagrees with you, what's happening? He's ridding himself. He's letting out his strong feelings. And this helps him to clarify his own thinking. And you know, when your children express their strong feelings, all of a sudden, when they hear it with their own ears, what they're saying, it doesn't seem so logical to them anymore. Give them that chance to express why they feel certain ways. Spend time with your child. You know, when I was a Dom, what time is it? 10 minutes.
3 minutes.
3 minutes?
No, it's 10:30.
Is it? I got 22 after.
10 minutes?
Thank you, everybody. Okay, where was I? Okay, spend time with your children. When I was a newsboy, when I was about 12 years old, I was collecting. I was invited into the house where the mother went to get the money. And a little talk comes up to me, and he looks up to me smiling. He says, "You know, my daddy loves me." I said, "Jimmy, how do you know your daddy loves you?" He says, "Oh, he plays with me all the time." We have to spend time with our children. We have to get down on their level. But don't just play. Study the truth. But study the truth in making it a way that it's entertaining and fun. And then instead of taking straight fun vacations, drive to a distant convention. But stop off at a national park or some other place where you can have an enjoyable time with them at the same time. And then on the way to and from, every time you stop for a meal, you know, pass out about 25 tracts in the parking lot just to get in the habit of tracting with you. And then be all fun. This will be a fun trip. Not only spend time with your children, but make truth activities fun, enjoyable for them. And then look for causes. 10, look for causes of misbehavior. All behavior has a cause. And there are always reasons why children and young people do what they do. These things don't just happen that way. There's a reason. Learn the reason. And if you learn the reason they're taking the wrong course, you can help guide them back to the right course. And again, in some instances, because we don't learn the reason for their behavior, we apply misappropriate punishment. And what happens? It only aggravates the situation, and it leaves deep personal scars. And you know, I shudder when I think of scars that we leave on our children. Because we all do. I can look at Janet, and I can look at Phil, and I can see so many wonderful things, qualities that they have, that we were able to enrich in them. But I look at them and I see scars also. Scars because I was imperfect. And all we can do is trust that as we try to apply the Lord's principles to the best of our ability, that the Lord can deal with these scars. He is the great physician that can heal all things. Assure your child that he is loved regardless of his behavior. A child needs to know that although you might dislike what he does, although you might punish him, you still love him. Never say to a child, "I don't love you." And never say to a child, "God doesn't like naughty children. God doesn't love naughty children." God does love naughty children. How do you know he loves naughty children? Because each one of us are naughty at times. Each one of us are sinful. Never, never, never say to your children that God doesn't love naughty children. God doesn't love you because you're naughty. Make the distinction. We don't love, we don't appreciate what you did, but we love you dearly. And tell them that God doesn't appreciate what you did, but he loves you dearly. And you know, we have a bond now with our children. We do things wrong, and God loves us. When our children do things wrong, let us show our father's example and love them. Point out the wrong, but make sure under those circumstances that they know that you love them. There's two other areas I wanted to get into. I won't, because of our chairman. I'm just kidding you, Don. No. Two more areas I'd like to get into, but I won't take time. One is, what's the worst possible scenario that can happen to our teenager? In our day, drugs or premarital sex. And premarital sex is getting to be quite a problem. A consecrated college youngster, young brother, came to me and he said, "Brother Ken," he says, "I know all the scriptures that say that love outside of marriage is wrong. But please, Brother Ken, tell me why love outside of marriage is wrong." Can you understand that? Can you understand that question? I can. Our youngsters are being raised in a society where there are no absolute moral values. On TV, in the movies, they see free love. They look at their friends. They're all involved, or a good percentage of them are involved in free love. If they're on campus, they're living in with others. And they're happy. Seemingly they're happy. What are we going to tell our children? Well, if they had 15 minutes, I'd tell you what to tell our children. But that's a problem. It's a serious problem. And another problem related to one of my opening statements. Unfortunately, our young people don't have enough partners, married partners, to go around. And they see this. They sense this when they're 15 or 16. And they start backing away from the truth movement. They start rebelling about going to meetings and conventions because they're thinking of a future. There are solutions. And we should tell them these solutions. And we as a Bible student movement have to work on these solutions. God bless you.